And our next speaker is someone who's been part of that development right from the beginning, a former president of the Muslim Association of Britain. It's a pleasure to welcome Anas El Tikriti.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, comrades and friends, Assalamu Alaikum, peace be with you all. Chair, friends, everyone, it's a great, great pleasure to be here today, and thank you very much to Stop the War and everyone who's been part of organizing this wonderful event. Jean Lambert said at the beginning that it's a very tough act to follow after Tony Benn. Believe me, Jean, this is very, very tough. It's no hiding the fact that we're here to talk about something which threatens us all. It may be labeled Islamophobia. We may be talking about the claim that this is a war against extremism or terrorism or violence of a religious nature, but in actual fact, what we're talking about here today is who we are, where we stand, what we believe in, our fundamentals, our principles, our values, and our ethics. Because if we were today to forsake any sector, any element of our society, then we all stand to lose. Let's not make any mistake about that. Friday of last week, on the 10th of November, Britain was awoken to the headlines that basically we were in the midst of a Muslim threat. The headlines of the broadsheets carried the statement of Dame Eliza Manningham-Buller, the chief of the MI5, in which she stated that basically we had to prepare ourselves over the next generation, no less, because we are going to continuously face the threat of Muslim extremism. Now, you see, when I walked out and went to the bus stop and went past a newsstand and saw many of the broadsheets and many of the tabloids carrying the headlines that there was a Muslim threat. Now, think of what any ordinary person waking up that day, going to work, what kind of image, what kind of reaction, what kind of perception that would build in their minds. How would they react to the very first woman in hijab or in niqab they would see? How they would react to the first person who looks like someone who could be a Muslim? Maybe a Hindu, maybe a Sikh, but hey, they all come together. They all look alike. It's very, very dangerous when the so-called intelligence forces make statements like this, because the first question that came to my mind was this. So what do we do? What is expected of the ordinary person on the streets of London to do when the head of MI5 comes out and says that we all face this grave danger that wants to eliminate us all, that wants to eradicate our way of life, our values, who we are? What do we do? Basically, it was essentially her job to find out whether or whether not anyone was actually plotting to make such a radical kind of transformation of British society and then deal with it. So to spread it out in the news definitely had the smell of something very, very rotten indeed. Now, also amongst what she said were a few very, very interesting but also very dangerous things. One of the things she said was that basically we have around 100,000 Muslims who support terrorism, who support the acts of people blowing themselves up on London's transport system. Now, I as a Muslim would question that, and question that, and, you know, quite seriously. But, you know, she should know what she's talking about, I'm presuming. Now, the very next day, Ian Blair, the head of London Met, came out and said 120,000 Muslims support terrorism. On Sunday, the very next day to that, Andrew Marr, on his morning show, asked David Davis, he said, is it possible that we have 200,000 Muslims who support terrorism? Now listen, I am all for Muslims populating the earth, but hey, over 48 hours for 100%, that's a little bit too much. Believe me, the problem is that I have come to believe, and I think, that a wide sector of our society has come to believe that actually our so-called intelligence services really do not know what they are talking about. They really do not know what they are doing. But also, Dame Eliza also mentioned something else, which was really, seriously, and I wrote in my blog today in The Guardian about this being a really, really cheap shot. She said that there are tens of thousands of Muslim children sitting in classrooms awaiting to be picked up by terrorists and extremists, awaiting to be radicalized. Now, how do you come back to that? How do you respond to such an accusation? What kind of message are you sending out to the parents that only a few months ago you told to rat and to spy on their own children? What kind of message are we sending out here? We've told parents to spy on their children. We've told teachers to rat on their students. We've told university students to look at their colleagues and see what they're doing. We've asked imams and scholars and the such to look at their, you know, their pupils and the such, and also wrap them and shop them to the forces, to the security forces. Exactly what kind of society are we about to build here? Now, this is a question that a lot of people are asking, and of course, the Muslim community particularly is asking exactly why is this hysteria happening? Now, coming back to Friday the 10th. Now, that day was a particularly bad day for Muslims in particular, but I think for the country as a whole. Because when we started that day with those kinds of headlines, we ended that day with the acquittal of Nick Griffin of all charges of inciting racial hatred and violence. Despite the fact that he had called Islam and all Muslims, as well as ethnics, of some of the most heinous, despicable and repugnant kind of labels and terms. You see, I still have some faith in our courts of law. Some may disagree, but I still have some faith in our courts of law. But the problem, you see, that we present, particularly to the Muslim community, is, and everyone knows, I hope, where I stand on the likes of Abu Hamza and the such. But hey, why did we send Abu Hamza to prison? Didn't he say exactly the same things, but to white people? Didn't he also call them in the most heinous terms? Label non-Muslims in the most despicable, repugnant terms? Why was he sent to jail and now faces extradition to the United States, while Nick Griffin now has the freedom to celebrate the fact that he can go on and on and on saying the same things about Muslims, and by the way, the role will come to non-Muslims as well. Now, all this came after the niqab fiasco, after the remarks made by the Pope, and after all that, and it just stinks of something which basically wants to bring in all circles of society, politicians, heads of religious communities, the media, social groups or so-called social groups and the such, to make it seem as though there is a consensus out there that Muslims are indeed a danger to our society. Let me tell you this. I have been involved in talking to and educating young Muslims for the past 20 years. And believe me, those extremists that sympathize with terrorists, I really, really, really struggle to come across any on my ordinary week. It's very, very difficult to find them. I don't know where those 100,000 or possibly even 200,000 people are hiding. But I can tell you this, that, and once again, I'm assuming and I'm hoping that Dame Eliza knows what she's speaking about. But believe me, as many terrorists or people who sympathize with terrorists that we have in our midst far more rapists, pedophiles, burglars, fraudsters and corrupt politicians and business people than we ever have had or have terrorists and extremists. Now we must get a measure and a control on what is happening, because this does look like a society governed by an element that has gone into hysteria. Peter Preston in The Guardian wrote on Monday of what he saw as the roots of terrorism, and he pointed to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. A report issued backed by Kofi Annan, the outgoing General Secretary, also mentioned that that conflict had gone on for far too long without a serious intervention, balanced intervention, from the powers that be around the world, particularly the United States and Britain. Now, you see, one thing that we have been arguing all along, since way before 9/11, we've been saying that people driven to act in folly and to act according to some skewed ideology which has no relationship to Islam, as far as I know, or to the Quran, as far as I know, and to kill others thinking that that is a holy act. Believe me, those people are driven by the state of politics, not driven by verses from the Quran or the Bible or the Torah. And that is something we have to start realizing. The problem we have is a problem of political nature. It is not a religious one. It is not an ideological one. Watch the videos or the clips of those so-called terrorists or extremists. What they say is what is happening in Palestine, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. That is what they're talking about. They are not quoting verses from the Quran and saying, we are acting upon our religion. We are not, my friends, we are not in the midst of a threat posed by religious extremism and terrorism. We are in the midst of a threat posed by political extremism and terrorism. And that is something that we must face. Two more points. In the case of Iraq, a few days ago, the country that the two mightiest military machines in the world occupy, having installed a puppet regime that has now reportedly more than 200,000 personnel in its armed forces, police forces and the such, 40 official vehicles drove through the streets of Baghdad, parked in front of the Ministry of Higher Education, stormed the building and forced 188 employees working that day in their offices, forced them out of the building, out of their offices and into those cars, and drove them away to an unknown location. They basically abducted them. This is a country that 3.5 years ago we claimed to have liberated, to have brought freedom, dignity and sovereignty to its people. This can happen in a country where our boys and girls are sent to watch over, to look out for. They're going there, possibly most of them, with the best intentions at heart, but being sent to overlook a crisis that was created by politicians that sent them there on the pretext of lies. The Iraqi people never wanted them there in the first place. Now we are told it is a fight between Sunnis and Shias. Remember, it first started by being fights or problems caused by the remnants of the regime. Then it became insurgents, then pockets of insurgents, then pockets of resistance. Then it was the Saddamists, then it was Al-Qaeda. Then Iraq all of a sudden became the hotbed of terrorism in the world. Now it's Sunnis and Shias. When will we ever come to say that it was the decision to go to war when no one wanted that war, let alone the Iraqi people? That is what created the fiasco in Iraq today. That is what has caused more than 600,000 deaths amongst Iraqi civilians. And finally, what are we going to do about the challenges that we face? Well, something that is happening on Monday, and hopefully with us will be Tony Benn, Lindsay, Kate, and many, many more of today's speakers. On Monday, in Westminster's Methodist Central Hall, there will be a rally co-organized by the British Muslim Initiative and Liberty. And basically, we will be denouncing and condemning Islamophobia and defending everyone's freedoms and rights to religious thought, to belief, to the freedom of conscience, the All the rights that are being confiscated and eroded day after day after day, we will be joined by people from across political parties, from across society, and hopefully that event will mark the first stepping stone towards initiating or establishing a far-reaching and broad coalition that fights the new face of racism that we all face today, and that is Islamophobia. This is not something that faces Muslims alone, my friends. Believe me, this is something that we promised ourselves as a civilized people that it will never, ever happen again. But now, unfortunately, under official guise and by executive decision, it is being carried out, activated and implemented once again whilst we watch. Well, we have decided that we will watch no more. Thank you very much for having me today. See you on Monday evening. Thank you very much.